Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake Up Hollywood, this is your host for the most, Nikki Carulla. We have tonight for our another quarantine episode of Wake Up Hollywood, producer, drummer, engineer extraordinaire, Mr. Sean P. Jones. Say hello, Sean.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me, Nikki.
I don't think I ever asked you what the P is for. What's your middle name?
Philip. That's okay. The middle name to answer the question. And I started calling myself Sean P. Jones in college because there already was a Sean Jones that was a famous jazz trumpet player. So I needed to differentiate myself some way. So I decided to go with the P.
I like it. Sean P. Jones. I like that you leave a little mysterious, a little mystery. You leave it all a little mysterious. You're like, I'm not going to tell you what it is. You're just going to know the initial.
See, and the funny thing is whenever I say it frenetically online when I'm talking to someone on the phone, like, you know, I say P as in ball.
And I because you would think P as in Philip, you wouldn't think as the, you know, yeah. That's not the best example.
It's a very hard P, you know? It's a hard P.
Well, I'm glad you're representing the P in all of its glory, dude.
Thank you. Yeah.
How are you doing in this new age of the music industry where we're all separated from each other and we are all in front of a computer, which is kind of the same and kind of different in a lot of ways? Talk to me about that.
I've been very blessed throughout this entire situation to where in March and April, I actually had a couple of good months because I had a bunch of projects coming in before COVID-19. And then May and June were pretty rough, you know, but then it seems like now the new cycle of artists creating and doing things is moving forward. So it's finding a new way in the post-production realm to keep
isn't
going.
Isn't it weird? Like the hustle is so different because it's like, I know you were playing live for a while. You know, doing some gigs that were like weekly gigs. And it's like now it's like a different way to think about it. And tell me how that transition was just from going from one to the other.
Well, the transition for me was actually the summer before COVID hit. So I kind of had a little bit of a head start on it compared to a lot of other live musicians. And it took me a few months out of being that to finally understand what the most important thing is for finding new work. And it's really been very helpful in the digital age now since COVID-19 is basically online social networking and online branding. That's kind of the primary source that I've been able to communicate with people since COVID-19 and also continue to communicate with new people as well too. Especially because now you can't go out and hang in someone at a bar. And it used to be the way that everything did work in LA, or, you know, you'd go out and you'd meet someone and then it would lead to something else. Now that's been completely taken away. The social aspect of networking is completely gone. Unfortunately, the only thing that's left now is social network. Which, you know, I know some people hate it, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm not like to the point where it infiltrates every part of me, but at the same time, you have to be on it to do some networking, and I feel like you will find some benefit if you kind of do things that you want to do that are exciting and inspired on social media to network or to listen to music or to hear stuff. What kind of ways are you using technology? Maybe it's apps or maybe it's plugins that you think it's like redefining what you do as a mixing engineer.
One of the greatest plugins that I've been using lately, and you know, it's kind of funny now the way stuff works, to where it's like, and I know this isn't just through music, but it's just everything. I'm like, wait, we could do this before COVID-19 and it's more efficient for everyone. Why don't we just do it this way now from now on? I have a lot of clients that there's a plugin I use called Audio Movers, which is an absolute great plugin, which I don't know if people are familiar with, but it's actually a subscription-based plugin that's, I believe, maybe $5 a week. So you don't have to have it all the time. But what it does is it streams the audio from my computer to a web browser to where they can listen to everything I'm doing. So what's great about it too
is... That's crazy.
Yeah, it's phenomenal for, especially let's say mix revisions. And I've done it for people that are out of state. But even now, when you want to do a live mix revision session with someone, you go, okay, cool. Let me just send you the link. Now I'm going to revise it right there. As opposed to, let's say, having to send the MP3 and send it back and forth. And
wait, so they have the session? They have the session up on their computer, like in real time?
With Audio Movers, you only are sending high quality audio. But let's say if you're using something like Zoom, you can also share your screen as well too. So through things like with Zoom and Audio Movers, it's basically like you're there. And this works really well for. I think it works really well for anything that's even production aspects. If let's say you're working on a production with someone, if you're Zooming and sharing the audio with it, you know things don't have to be in real time. You can have a little bit of a lag. Obviously, if you're recording, that's going to be a major issue still. There's a lot of people that are trying to figure out workarounds with that, so you can basically record with zero latency, but it's still not really kind of gotten to the things are just like really effective and easy to do.
Right. Well, it's funny. It's like you're one of the people, I've got like maybe about 5 to 10 people that love so much of the tech, which I do too, because you see what's possible and you see like what things are, you know, like what apps are capable of. And, you know, for me, the I have a guitar friend who told me about the Corey Wong Archetype plugin, which is like one of the coolest guitar plugins I've ever used, man. It is amazing. It's got all these effects on it.
You're going to have to tell me about that. What is this plugin? Oh,
it's so awesome. It's basically like you have all kinds of guitar settings from records from Wolfpack, which is like a great funk band. I know you know them. And you can use, Corey's got three different amps that you can use, like a clean funk funk tone. You can do auto wah. You can do, he's got this crazy reverb pedal that sounds like the Big Sky, you know, so like, which is a reverb pedal. He's just got all these really great sounds and amps, and it's like $100. It's like $150, something like that. But it is one of the best things I've bought. It's like buying a pedal that's going to always completely be a sound or something that I use. I use it now more for my guitar sounds than anything, you know, that I have on Logic, any plugins. It's just the best guitar plugins. So like I love asking that question to people, because no engineer, no musician, no artist ever tells me the same one twice. It's always something different.
Yeah, there's so much stuff out there right now that just sounds so great and it's so inexpensive, you know. And so
last time we talked, you grew up in Colorado, right?
Close, Nebraska. Way more boring than Colorado.
Okay,
but I did a lot. I did a lot of vacationing in Colorado.
Okay, yeah, that's why I got confused, because I know you visited family, your parents, you've done some trips in Colorado, so maybe that's why I got confused. So you grew up in Nebraska. You went to North Texas for college, and I remember you came out here. You had a mentor from your school that brought you out to LA and said, "This is how this city works." Now that you've been here, what, maybe 6-7 years now, maybe more than that?
How long have you been? Actually, 8 years now. This fall,
8 years. So now you are an official Angeleno. Now that you look back, how accurate was his advice as to what LA is?
It's very, very accurate. You know, the hard thing that I'm just kind of starting to realize now is very genuinely a lot of the things that I really wanted to do in the industry, it's a lot harder to do when you're younger, you know? And so it's kind of like you have to almost tape it. That's the thing that I'm constantly battling with, and I know a lot of people are, is that like luckily I had a pretty good playing gig at the times where I could kind of just like twiddle my thumbs and get good at a lot of different things. But, you know, just even now that I'm in my early 30s, I was 25 when I moved here, people look at you differently as well too. Like, it's like, you know, a lot of the younger artists want to work with people that are a little bit older than them than someone that's just their same age. So it's kind of like, you just, you have to like take a step back and be like, okay, you know, he kind of nailed what LA is, but a lot of it I couldn't do just because based on the age. Now that I'm just a little bit older, I feel a lot more confident and kind of doing and going for the things that I want to do.
Well, one thing I also respect about your process, you're always perfecting your process. You're an engineer I use a lot whenever I produce artists to mix tracks for them. And you're always improving your setup, your process. And I hear no mixes, maybe a long-term, you know, difference, and then maybe something super immediate that you've changed or noticed. Maybe it's like how you listen to mixes, how you approach mixes, where you're panning things. What are some details as to things that you really feel like have kind of broadened your taste or, you know, particular sounds?
I mean, what's kind of interesting about that is like, for me, I just try to really focus on just getting like 1% better every day. And I really do take pride on just getting like a little bit better every day, you know, because it's just like, when you do that 1% better over the course of, you know, 100 days, that's 100% better. And if you, it's all, so it's like people would try to keep getting better all the time, like by huge leaps and bounds. I mean, that's not possible to do. So like every time I just try to get a little bit better. The thing I try to stay in with is just like really staying focused on loving what I do and like taking pride in the work that I do. I consider myself more of a craftsman than an artist. And I just like, I really do take pride in quality of like doing good work for other people. And so with
you
that,
do, man. You really do.
Thank you. You know, and it's just, I try to make the artist and the producer and anyone that I'm working for happy that they're, you know, working for me. Because ultimately, I mean, that's the one thing that I've seen in other engineers and other people is that it's sometimes it can be an ego game with them. You know, it's like, well, I have to be the one that, you know, scores all the points. It's like, man, like, no, like, I mean, most of the times, like you told me one of my favorite things, and I've told a lot of other producers this too, is that thing of like when you're working on something and then it's just like you take a step back, like this will not affect the sales. You know, it's just like, yes. Just like you yes. Gotta get, like keep going forward and like the little things that you really care about and just be like, I just want to get a good project done for everyone involved. And it doesn't matter whether or not I get the credit or not. You know, it's just like, I hope that answers your question of kind of like,
oh,
like
absolutely.
How I try to improve, you know?
Absolutely. You know, and it's just those little things. I love that you said that 1% every day because, you know, you can't have like these monumental things. I find this with my own crafts. You know, it's like you can't have these like huge breakthroughs every day. If you're doing it every day, it's just about being consistent. Like maybe it's drawing a circle. You can't draw it more perfectly than the next in this huge momentous way. It's just about being that consistent every day and a little bit more consistent than you were yesterday. So I love that you said that 1% thing because that is everything and will not affect sales. This is probably the greatest advice or lesson I've ever learned. So I love that you bring that mantra because what I love about when you send me mixes, and this is a huge compliment because I've worked with so many engineers, but what I love about working with you, I can send you something and you will so cleanly send me something back that doesn't need much improvement. I don't need to give you many notes. Those are my favorite engineers. It's like when you've done the work that is the essential meat and potatoes of a track, then I can like hone in on the fine tuning things that maybe the artist wants or maybe that I want to hear out of the track, because sometimes you'll work with mixing engineers that just, they miss the mark, man. They're putting every plugin they can possible on a kick or like whatever it is, yeah. Compressing everything way too much, whatever it is. And it's like you are super fast and clean and clear about getting the things that you want. What would you say is like your biggest, approach that you just take on with every track that you know that you're going to get the result that you're going to get?
I mean, the biggest thing that I've really kind of shifted lately to is, like, I'll take whatever reference mix I have, and then I'll just try to make it sound way better than that, but keep the essence of what is in that track. You know, I know a lot of people, but this is actually, I have to develop a relationship with, let's say, the artist or the producer, you know, a lot of times, because I don't reinvent, let's say, the effects or anything on the track that I've been given, unless they explicitly ask me to do it, because I consider that very much like a production element. You know, if they have certain delays or certain effects like that. So I'll just take whatever they do and just kind of like clean it up and make it sound way better and really try to just like make it come alive. You know, I always like equate it to, like, you know, another really big passion of mine is cooking. And with that, like, I equate, you know, like what I do is I'm the chef. I'm taking all the ingredients that someone gives me and I put it together. I can't change the recipe. You know, so I can't say, well, this, all I can do is kind of change the ratios of the stuff that maybe are given to me in the recipe. You know, so I can't just say, well, let me add this now and let me take away this. I kind of have to use what I have to still get the emotional effect of what they're trying to get out of the track.
I love that. I love that you made a parallel to cooking too, because, man, with quarantine especially, I've been so way into cooking, and it's so much like music. When I teach production to students, I always say, or when I, you know, even with putting a set list together, I always say, you're a chef. You're creating a menu. When you're making a mix, that is the recipe. It's like you're putting all the essential ingredients and how you want them to sound and be prepared. Do you ever feel, and this is something that I always kind of obsess over, I'll listen to a mix that I maybe did 5 years ago or a song that I produced 5-10 years ago, and I will see why I did certain things back then, but then I'll also see how I listen to it is differently because I'm listening for different things. Do you find that with old mixes that you can almost get obsessed with perfecting them to a point, you know?
Yeah, I mean, whenever I listen to old mixes, the one thing I'm surprised with is how, you know, like, there's definitely things I would do different, but surprisingly, they still sound pretty good. And right. And a lot of it, ultimately, the one thing I will say about mixes, ultimately for me too, is that, like, a good, like, this is one thing that one of my regular clients has taught me, Jam in the Van, and it's that idea that, like, I can only make something sound so good. If the artistry and the music isn't there in general, like, it doesn't, it's not going to sound good no matter what I do. But if it's right. A really good band and it's a really good production, it just mixes. It mixes themselves. You know, it just mixes itself. It's just like, oh, this just comes together and it works so well. And I know what to do because the recipe I got is just so perfect as it is. And so when I look back and I listen to those mixes, the ones I'm like, you know, heck yeah, I really like what it was, is the band was really, really good. And it made my job really easy. And the ones I'm like, eh, and then it comes to be like, and not to put it off that I'm not, you know, improving at what I do, but I really feel a lot of it also is just the musicians and the what you are mixing.
Well, let's also talk about Jam in the Van, because not a lot of people know what it is, but it's a studio that's in a van that records artists that are playing festivals. So you've mixed some great artists like Gary Clark Jr. Did you do the Marcus King sessions? Did you do the great? Those are two of my favorite sessions that you've done. Mention some of the other artists that you've been able to mix through Jam in the Van.
I mean, there's probably too many for me even to remember. I remember some of the fun ones for me was Blues Traveler.
Oh, awesome.
Spin Doctors, Sublime awesome. With Rome. Tower of Power was a really fun one that we did. Like, that was really interesting to see that entire band in the small little van. And so I got to work with all these different, you know, working with all these different artists to, like, do it, you know. I can look, I mean, I don't know how many it is, but I think we're up to maybe over 1,000 different bands I've mixed with them over the years now.
That's awesome.
So a lot of that also goes to, like, just the amount of work that I've done doing that. Like, you're going to get good. If you're conscientious about what you do and you care about what you do, you're going to get better if you do that much work over time, right?
I love that you probably were fans of a lot of these bands before you worked with them. And then, like Tower of Power, I know that you're the same way that I am. We kind of grew up in music school listening to those first records of Tower of Power, and they became like the monumental funk records, the quintessential horn section records. So that when you get the chance to like work on their performances, that's just a huge honor, and you know that's like a rite of passage too.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of fun, especially when you get to be like, wow, I'm able to mix what is hip. This is such a right. fun thing, and that's going to get released, you know, stuff like that. It really does make, I mean, that's the reason why I moved out to LA, is that like you get to take part in like doing some fun things like this and working with different people, you know. These opportunities don't exist as much in the center of the country.
Right. Do you ever tell the guys, because like are you working on mostly do the mixes, I believe, right, for Jam in the Van?
Yeah, I mean, I do 99.9% of the mixes for Jam in the Van right now.
So like, do you ever tell them like, what mics are you using for the horns? What mics are you using for the amps? Do you kind of give them like little specifications that you want to get out of to get certain sounds out of each instrument?
Yes, yes and no. I mean, the engineer that we use, that he's pretty good about doing that. Luckily, we're also endorsed by Audio Technica. And oh, so all of our nice. Mics, yeah, all of our mics are from Audio Technica. So with that, you know, in general, because we are endorsed by them, like I will just say, even if we weren't, almost all their mics are just really high quality mics. No mic that Audio Technica uses is a low quality mic. They might not have the most expensive, you know, Telefunken or Neumann quality mics, but their stuff across the board is just very high quality. So all the mics that we put on everything, it's just like, I very rarely get something that comes back. Unless actually we just did a session. Jam in the Van's actually kind of switched over now to where we're not doing stuff inside the van because it's a closed thing and it's not ventilated. They're actually doing what they call speakeasy sessions, where they're doing a concert where everyone's socially distanced apart, and they're actually giving a concert outside the van and like doing a whole thing and filming it. So we just did a new band. We just did a new band, and what's actually kind of interesting about that is the vocals, I just could not get to sound good, and I called the engineer, and I was like, you know, what mics were those on the vocals? I asked, and he said, oh, yeah, they brought their old-timey vocal mics. It was just like some old, stuff like that. And I'm like, okay, no wonder. It wasn't the, you know, they did it for aesthetic purposes to have it look a certain way, and right. It was way harder to mix, you know?
It's those old ribbon mics. They probably used an old ribbon mic that looked cool.
Like the RCA or something. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. And it's tough because it's like the vibe is, you know, the visual of a mic, an old mic is amazing. But some of those old mics sound like shit. You know, and yep. You know this, you know?
So yeah, absolutely.
You probably are like pulling your hair out like, how am I going to get this to the quality that I can get it to you. So tell me, you know, let's talk about that for a second. Like you get, you know, an old ribbon mic or something that's not the most desirable mic sound. How do you kind of convert it to something that you do, or what do you pull out of it? Do you EQ it differently? Do you kind of use more, compression, less compression? What's kind of your attack?
A lot of it is like, I'll kind of see what the vibe of the track. I actually had something that was, that was sent to me to mix recently that was like very much a pop track. And I kind of very delicately hit up the producer because he's a little bit younger than me, because it sounded like he had the microphone turned around. And like you could just tell, like I'm getting a lot of room in this. Like, and it's like, are you sure the micro? And like, because I didn't let the artist know that he did it, you know? And like, but then it was just kind of like, okay, let me just kind of lean into this a little bit more. So like if there's a specific sound or vibe of a microphone or whatever it is, sometimes I'll just lean into it more and hopefully it'll give me a little bit more character on the mix of the track. I don't always try to go for just the absolute cleanest sound or whatever we're going for, you know? So it really does depend on the track. Sometimes I'll have a lot of slap delay or something on there to really give like an old, you know, Amy Winehouse vibe or something like that.
Well, I always find too, whenever I make a band record, it's always like a rite of passage of learning of what I'm going to leave in tracks. And I found that I really love distortion on tracks. Like you look at I looked at a lot of my old favorite Beatles tracks, Revolution. Songs are my favorite songs and I never knew why. And a lot of it's because it distorts. So I kind of left distortion in a lot of tracks on this new record. You know, I find that, like, you know, sometimes I have to go through a process of mixing something and then realize that very ingredient that I'm trying to get out of that mix is in a lot of things that I've been listening to for years. Do you ever find that, like, that there's something that you're trying to, maybe it's an old Pink Floyd sound that you're trying to, like, get out of something that's modern, and you realize they've been doing it this certain way all along, and that's why it's kind of in your music DNA? Are there any kind of things that you've kind of gone through where you find the processes are the same or there's a parallel?
There's actually, it's kind of funny because there's a project I just started working on right now that's, like, flat out kind of a modern take on, like, Pink Floyd. And so a lot of that is, like, trying to, like, keep the essence of those things. Like, when I got session, so everything was, like, peaking and distorting and doing all this stuff, to where I'm like, okay, now I need to, like, make it so that I'm not doing, like, you can't digitally distort. Like, that's just not a good thing to do, right? But how do I get that now to where it's not digitally distorting, but to where I then will still keep the essence of what they're going for? So that's a lot of times that I'll start running stuff through my analog gear just to kind of, like, give it up and spank it up, that kind of vibe, you know, just to make sure that it kind of keeps what the essence of what they're going for is. You know, the Beatles were very lucky in the sense that they were limited to the amount of technology that they had. And because of that, they just had to, like, kind of make good with what they had. I mean, I know that's a weird thing to say, but, like, there's something so liberating to the fact that you only have four tracks at one point. You know, people don't mean, like, okay, well, I have to commit to the sound, and now let me record the new sound on the same tape sound, so I hope we don't screw it up. Because if as now we just have a million options that we can do all the time, to where it's just like it kind of stunts creativity, because it's, well, let me just create a new track, let me just do this, let me just, you know, make it perfectly clean or whatever we want to do.
That's such a great analogy, because it's so true. It's so easy, especially with digital, to just keep on adding more tracks, not even using the tracks all the way through. That's what I noticed with analog recording. You're using the track all the way through most of the time. It's very rare you just have half of a track, whereas digital sessions, you'll have three, you know, quarter of the song missing on a track just for that one bridge guitar or, you know, whatever it is. So you get those, you know, sounds out of it. So how do you kind of manage with artists that maybe want to use the conveniences of digital, but also try to create something that we know about those old records? It's a big, sustained sound that kind of, you know, transcends time.
Well, it's weird. It depends, because, like, the amount of tracks are not, I mean, like, I did a mix recently that had 220 tracks that was on it.
Oh my!
And, like, it's at one level, from just, like, a you know, organizing standpoint, it was a real nightmare. But having said that, like, there was surprisingly.
Did they warn you before?
No, I mean, but having said that, it's a relatively dense pop track, but it's not, like, outrageously dense, because, like you said, a lot of it's just like, well, this one track only has a background vocal on the you know, the second chorus, and that's it, right? Whereas, like, the Pink Floyd thing that I'm dealing with right now, and this is what makes it more challenging at one level, even though it has way less, it may have, like, 40 tracks, right? But all of that is an instrument playing every single second all the way through. So now I'm just like, okay, so now I have to blend these 40 different elements. I mean, a lot of those, of course, are drums, but it's still that idea that, like, that's sometimes even more difficult, just because there is something playing on every track. And so I would rather have 220 tracks of just one little thing at one little point than, like, 40 tracks of just, like everything going on all the time. Because, again, like I said, like, when I'm mixing, it's just like you're giving me a lot of stuff all the time that I have to then work with and find a way to make it all work together.
That's awesome. Do you find that, when you get something that's like a modern day Pink Floyd thing, that the intent is to kind of capture that old sound, or they're trying to take it to, like, a new place using those same ingredients?
I think a lot of times it's like people are trying to take new place with the same ingredients, because just old sounding recordings that you're never going to go back to. Like, and I think of that, of, like, we're talking about the Beatles, right? You know, what's so amazing about, let's say, especially the Beatles, into that late 60s, the early 70s era is one of the most interesting things ever for me to listen to mixes critically, because that's right when stereo was really coming in. And so when it was coming in, it's just like, so what are we going to do with the vocal? Let's pan the vocal all the way to the right, you know? And so it's like, or let's do that, you know, so whatever it is. So it's like, even if, let's say, Pink Floyd did something very kind of, at the time, it was revolutionary for panning, now we just don't do that. So if I were to do that, let's say, take a vocal and pan it all the way to one side, a lead vocal, right? All the way to one side, and the drums all the way to do another side, which they were kind of doing back then. Now it'd just be like, well, you're stylistically correct, but this is what now everyone's doing kind of with, let's say, especially panning. It's kind of like it's like theory and everything else. You have to know the rules so that you can know how to break them at some level too.
Yeah, I actually keep going back to Pink Floyd records, because there's a certain level of just sustained tone that those records have that most records never get close to. Like, there's so many people, like Beck Morning Phase is a fantastic record. A buddy of mine actually mixed that, and that's one of the closest records to that sound, and it still doesn't come close to Pink Floyd Dark Side of the Moon, the sustained guitar sounds, or just like the airiness of those recordings. So I feel like I'm always chasing something like that. I wanted to ask you this because I've been just asking a lot of musicians and engineers the question, do you feel like the memory of a song is different than the actual mix or the sound of a song? Let's say a song that you heard in high school or college or even a couple weeks ago, the memory of what the song is in your mind, or maybe the emotional value that it holds, carries a different weight once you actually hear it in a new setting, maybe with new monitors, headphones. Like, how does that change as you're listening to music and trying to chase down those mixes?
Well, it's funny that you would say that, because like, I actually had the weirdest, I think 100% that the song itself carries emotional value no matter what the mix is. And so I think that the mixing engineers or technical people or anyone, they have to take a step back and be like, dude, it can have an emotional effect on someone no matter what it is. And like, even if it's arguably a good mix or a bad mix or whatever, it's just like, it has a connection. Like, I mean, that's just like, to where last night, the weirdest thing, I had this weird dream where I literally had a jazz song stuck on repeat. And I'm like, I think that's Art Blakey. I think that's Monin. And then I wake up and I listen to it in the morning. I'm like, holy crap. Like, that's what was in my head. And I had not listened to that song for arguably maybe at least 6 or 7 years. There'd be no way that but it just like popped up into my head for some reason, you know, and it created this weird emotional connection to it, you know? And like, since then I was like listening to them, like, oh, let me listen to some old Art Blakey records and see what they sound like. And like, you know, I mean, that is the one fun thing about what I do, is that I really am. And it's why I ultimately got into engineering and everything in the first place, is that I'm an audiophile. I like things that sound really good. And so it's like, well, let me get some studio monitors. And then it's like, oh, that's so cool. I can actually hear stuff that I couldn't hear before. And now with the monitors that I use, and like, you know, I have to tell myself, like, I mean, like, that's like crazy. Like, what did I do? I went to a lot of the Sting and the Police stuff to actually hear records? How that sounded.
What records?
Well, I was listening to some of his later stuff. What, 10 Summers Tales?
10 Summers Tales. I love that record.
You know, and what's crazy about it, or some of the other stuff, what's the one with Brand New Day? You know, I mean, I'm a big...
Oh, yeah. New Day is a great record.
Yeah.
Great
who record. Doesn't love who doesn't love Vinny Colaiuta? But like, when I'm listening to it, and like, I listen to it at my place, and then I realize, holy crap, that's actually not his snare, that sound. That's like mixed with a sample thing, and they're just doing such a good job of mixing it that when I'm in the studio I can hear it instantaneously, but when I'm just listening to it on my speakers at home or my earpods, like I can't hear it, you know? And so like, there is something special of being able to listen to music in a really high quality environment, because you can really hear things a lot further. It's like, you know, to go back to the analogy of food, it's like you can eat the food, but it's like there's the difference between that and like, you know, I don't know, maybe being on LSD or something out and like tasting every little thing, you know, like, oh my god, I can taste every little morsel of salt in this meal. This is amazing, you know.
Yeah, no, you know, I also think that, you know, it's that attention to detail that kind of makes, you know, you listening to it on high fidelity speakers. That's how I am. Like when people show me tracks on a cell phone, like I like almost do a double take. I'm like, why are you showing me this on a cell phone? Like, this is crazy. This is not the way you should listen to music, you know?
I completely agree. But the funny thing that you say, that you're asking me what thing that's helped my mixes and a lot of things better. One thing I'm constantly into right now is also just chasing what the consumers listen to music on. So unfortunately, I will sometimes, I think that the iPhone is like maybe the new car check at some, you know, at some level. You have to listen to what it's up my mixes through a lot, and is just my Apple earpods, my AirPods, excuse me. And the reason is because everyone has a pair. You know, that's like arguably probably one of the most widely used headphones out there now, today.
But don't you think it's crazy? Like, you have a great studio with all this great gear, all these great studio speakers, a board, all these great microphones, all these great plugins, and you're mixing for earbuds. You know, it's like,
I know what you're saying. And at one level, you can look at it as frustrating, but I look at it as like, I can't decide where the consumer is going. I just have to accept that fact. And at the same level, it's like, well, I'm sorry if you're listening to them on shitty earpods. Like, at least I can still listen to them on, I can still listen to them at the studio and listen to it in amazing quality. And so because of that, I get the best of both worlds. And so I had to buy my earpods for a tax deduction, you know?
That's right. No, it's always nice when you can use gear or music technology stuff as write-offs, because you're like, hey, I needed this new computer. Hey, I needed this new set of speakers or this new instrument. Now, tell me about, I know you've always been a drummer. How are you incorporating your drumming on tracks, or are you kind of like taking, do you ever like take drumming, like just take a groove and just start making, building tracks, or using some of those snare hits as samples? Or do you ever use any of that? Like, or do you prefer samples that on the computer that are digital?
It's weird. I mean, the one thing that I've kind of switched over to in the last 6 months for production and working on stuff is actually using Ableton Live. I absolutely love Ableton Live. It's really great. I think it's one of the best production tools. I see why a lot of producers use it. Having said that, I still won't mix anything unless it's in Pro Tools. I think Pro Tools is phenomenal for that. But so when it comes to like live drums versus sample drums, it's like, it's just kind of in general now, like it's weird, but just the way a lot of music is going, everything's using sample drums. And so again, it's kind of that thing where it goes back to like, I can either be upset that like everyone's listening to music on earpods, but, or I can accept it and just move forward and find a way to, you know, make it as sound as good as possible with that. And it's the same thing with sample drums, you know. It'd be nice to be able to record. I mean, I guess that's why I've also been able to survive a lot of ways, is because when I got out of school, I wasn't tied to just having to make a living being a professional drummer. I kind of was like, well, you know, what if I did this and I did something? I'm like, being a session wizard, I actually never did it at all, just because I always found myself on the other side of the mirror. So now I'm just kind of like, well, if it's samples, if that's the way it is, I mean, let's just make the best sounding samples that we possibly can. But if it's like a band record, I guess I look at it as like, what's the style of music that we're doing? You know, it's like, if you were to bring me your band together and you're like, okay, you know, it's the Nikki Carulla band, but we're going to do a sample drum, like, but that's not your band. Like, you know, you need to use a real drummer. But then if we're doing trap music and stuff like that, it's just like, yeah, let's use samples. That's what you do, you know? And so if I was working with a band, and they were an actual band and they wanted to start using samples all the time, it's just like, let's try to get some good drum sounds first. You know,
some of those R&B groups, like they'll use a really killer drummer and they'll be playing drums, like drum samples on one of those little pads. You know what I'm talking about, right?
NPC pads. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And it's like, that never makes sense to me over just real drums. Like when you put a real drummer on real drums, nothing sounds better to me for a groove, a sound. You listen to all those James Brown records, that shit would sound terrible if it was all sample drums. But you're right, if it's a trap song, or like, you know, if I ever do something for a DJ, you know, it's never going to be with real drums. It's going to have very limited amounts of real instruments. Do you feel like that is the future, that where it's all going to go? Or do you think there's going to be like a happy medium where it comes, it bounces back, where it's like a more of a hybrid of real instruments and digital instruments?
I think that, I mean, what it will ultimately be is, I don't think live instruments are ever going away, you know? I think the question is, quote, popular music, you know, will it be in the popular music that you're hearing, quote, on the radio now, which the radio is completely irrelevant as it is, or that you're hearing on streaming services or whatever? Are you going to hear it? The stuff, but maybe I should say popular music is like kind of what's being pushed to the masses by corporations at some level, right? The ones that are actually have funding and have like budgets behind them to push it to, you actually hear it some way through advertising. You know, I don't know where it's going to go, but I think no matter what, the live music thing will never go away. You know, the live recording of those instruments will never go away. It's just like the same way that like the popular era of what jazz was in, you know, really the 30s and 40s, right? And then it's never gotten back there since, but there's still jazz and it's never going to go away, you know, but like,
I mean, there's some good stuff in the 50s and 60s, though, too, man. You had Miles Davis.
No, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that there wasn't good stuff, but the height of its popularity in America was in the 30s and 40s. And since then, it probably never will come back to that height of popularity again. It's just like, it might be unfortunate, but the height of popularity of certain styles of music or live music might not ever come back to the way that it was. It doesn't mean that it's necessarily going to go away. So I think if a musician or an artist or someone goes into it with the goal that I need to make this the more popular than what's currently out there, it might be very hard. But if they go into it with the idea of like, I want to make music because this is the type of music that I love and this is what really, you know, kind of appeals to me, I think they'll be able to find an audience. It just might not be the hugest audience in the world anymore.
Well, I know you're like this, like I am too. When you listen to modern day or current day music, there's always a lot of, it sounds kind of homogenous, but there's always an album or a song or maybe a couple songs that just blows your mind as far as the mix, as far as what was recorded. Maybe it's the voice, maybe it's all of it. Give me some examples of some songs that you think today are some of the best mixed songs or best, you know, overall experience you've had for listening.
Some of them recently, you know, and I'm trying to think, some of them recently have been about 3 or 4 years old and they've just stuck with me and sounding really, really good. There's a B-side track on a Charlie Puth album called Voice Notes that's called Boy, which I don't know if you're familiar with that track.
But, yeah, the whole record, man. I love that record.
Yeah, that track is phenomenal to me. And what's kind of fun about it is that track, Charlie Puth basically did it all by himself, but then he had my favorite mixer, Manny Mariquin, mix it. And like, whenever I listen to that track, it's the perfect blend of just an amazing production, because it has this really, really syncopated thing that, like, when I found out why it happened, when I researched the interview and said it, which was just something messed up where I think he was in Logic or Pro Tools and everything was on the downbeat and he accidentally shifted everything over by a 16th note early. And then he listened to it, it was like, oh man, that sounds really cool. And it was like that one of the, and that was what was really cool about, you know, just modern music making, is that would not have been possible in the Beatles' time, you know, to accidentally make a digital mistake and then have something cool happen of it. So, you know, so to go back, so that, there's some great cuts on that. There's a Zed and I think it's a Alessia Cara track, In the Middle, which is just for me, great just track. Such a phenomenal mix. And again, a lot of those, I don't know how much of it is dependent on the mix or the production that I really like. But I love the fact that like you have an entire hook where literally it's just the lead vocal and like a percussive element. And it's not even drums, it's just like a clock, you know? I mean, like that's just cool and like unique and weird that, you know, stuff like that.
I agree with all of that. I know you got more examples. You there, Sean? Sean, you there? I think we lost you, dude. Sean? You there, Sean? I think we lost him. Sean? I'm going to text you. I think your phone may have died. Let's see what happened. Sean, are you there? Ronan, are you there? Okay. Well, Sean was on, and I don't know what happened, but we'll just wait till maybe he logs back on. That's so funny. All right. Well, I guess he dropped. We lost Sean, but what an incredible interview. And he mentioned some great, great artists that I personally love. I love the Charlie Puth stuff. I also love Man American's mixes are some of the best. Sean is one of my favorite mixing engineers because he mixes things with so much vibe and nuance. And we're going to just, I guess we're going to end the interview here because I don't see him coming back. But if you want to check out any of Sean's mixes, check out seanpjones.net. And he's one of my favorite mixing engineers. I use him all the time. And he's one of my favorite people too. He's just a great cat. And we're going to have to just sign off from here. But thank you, Sean. I know that you got somehow you disconnected, but we'll have to have you back, man. And we're going to just sign off right here. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you guys next week.